From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, it's called Redirect, trying to find some happiness in your life. By the way, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at the highlights picture. They found an alligator living in the backyard of a home in Van Nuys, California. It had been there for 37 years. 37 years. I don't think it's there anymore. Here's what's happening. This year's flu vaccine is only 23% effective, according to new estimates from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That figure is on the very low side of effectiveness for flu vaccines and confirms earlier speculation among public health officials that this season's vaccine was a poor match for the dominant viruses in circulation. Now, in the last 10 years, the CDC has been studying flu vaccine effectiveness. Seasonal vaccines have ranged from 10% to 60% in their effectiveness to prevent, they say, flu-related visits to medical practices. I don't take the flu shot. If you do, that's up to you. George Soros apparently funded the Ferguson, Missouri protests, hoping to spur some civil action. The billionaire gave at least, get this, $33 million in 1 year to groups that supported activists. That's what he does. Jeez. Two suspected jihadists have been killed in an anti-terror operation in eastern Belgium. The prosecutor there says a third person has been arrested in the raid. No police or members of the public were harmed. Police had targeted a group returning from Syria who had been about ready to launch some attacks in a matter of hours. Suspects had opened fire on police with assault weapons. Ryan Moore, of course, is a security analyst for the ClarionProject.org. Ryan, what's your take on what has been going on over the past few weeks out there in Europe?
Well, obviously, I mean, it's a sign of the fact that Al-Qaeda is still alive and well, particularly in Yemen, which we've known, but this is the first time that they've actually had trained operatives in a sleeper cell inside of Europe carry out an attack like that. But the most significant thing for me is that you had operatives from both ISIS and Al-Qaeda working together, which is something that their leadership would never approve of. So this might be the beginning of a new trend where members of these two groups begin working together and say, you know what, let our leaders continue squabbling. We think it's stupid. Let's get this job done.
They seem to be coming out of the woodwork, Ryan. Is that a pretty good guess?
Over the past year, yes, and that's because of the influence of ISIS. When they have success, that enables them to go make the pitch that Allah is blessing them, and then that radicalizes people. So we can't allow them to appear to be winning.
What's new with the Clarion Project these days, Ryan?
Well, two things. We're really doing a lot of research on radical Islam in the U.S. You can sign up for our newsletter at clarionproject.org. And I also want to bring attention to another group that's not affiliated with us, but it's hackthemback.com. If you're looking for an opportunity to retaliate against North Korea yourself for as little as $5, you can send a DVD into North Korea and help bring that regime down.
I love it. Ryan, thanks. A man from New Hampshire, accused of putting a two-year-old boy in a dryer, has pleaded guilty to assault. Police say the 27-year-old man admitted that he put his girlfriend's son in the dryer, turned it on while he was babysitting, watching the little kid tumbling along. The boy suffered second-degree burns on his back and arms and burns and blisters on his feet. This guy is scheduled to be sentenced in a few weeks. Jeez. When I was a little boy, I used to rush to Radio Shack all the time, and I'd buy these little transistors, and I'd make little radios and stuff. And then Radio Shack kind of evolved. It became a little more technical. Those were fun days. Radio Shack plummeted a whopping 35.6% in its stock. It's down to 26 cents a share on a report that the company could file for bankruptcy protection reportedly as soon as next month. The embattled consumer electronics retailer is in talks with a private equity firm that would buy its assets out of bankruptcy. And Caesars, of course, the huge casino complex in Las Vegas, they're filing bankruptcy too. Catherine Austin Fitz, investment advisor. Well, what's going on, Catherine? I thought the economy was booming.
Well, it depends on what sectors you're in. Remember, retail is being re-engineered, and so if you're Radio Shack, you're getting squeezed by Best Buy, Walmart, and Costco, which are struggling to pitch a consumer is getting squeezed, and then the online is squeezing you in the mobile strategy. So they're in the middle, they're getting squeezed. But I have to say, George, I'm amazed to watch what's happening in casinos. I say that Obamacare has done to casinos what, you know, a generation of preachers could never do.
I know, it's just unbelievable. Of course, Las Vegas is built by losers. And if people aren't going there gambling, they're going to lose a lot of money.
Yeah, but here's you know, you had a whole world of people, you know, millions and millions of people who had discretionary income of $100 to $1,000 a year. And then Obamacare comes along and commands that money. And a lot these organizations, whether it's Radio Shack or the casinos, they were the tail. They were competing for that $1,000, you know, to $100 a month. And now it's gone. Jerked from them. It's gone. And, you know, so these are entities that are serving folks in the, you know, who are not the 1%. The 1% are doing just gangbusters, and the stores that serve them are going gangbusters, too.
Let's talk further in a week or two, Catherine. I want you to put some thoughts together on the rest of 2015 as we, in a couple months, start going into the second quarter already.
Oh, hey, George, geez. We just published our 2014 annual wrap-up with a big look at what's going to happen in 2015. So
we'll do
I'm
it.
Ready when you are.
You got it. Thanks, Catherine. Catherine Austin Fitz, her website, Solari.com, part of our Twitter feed. And make sure you spend time going to our Twitter feed. We send you little messages every day, too. On that. A study by astrophysicists at the University of Toronto suggesting that exoplanets outside of our solar system are more likely to have liquid water and be more habitable than we thought. But we always thought they were habitable anyway, didn't we? Here's an amazing story out of the United Kingdom. 17-year-old little girl. A teenage girl spent 3 years of her life convinced that she was dead to a rare medical condition known as the walking corpse syndrome. 17 years old, Haley Smith suffered from the ultra-rare illness called Cotard's syndrome. Sufferers genuinely believe that they are dead or that parts of their body no longer exist, and some die from starvation because they feel that they no longer have to eat. With the help of a therapist and, strangely, Disney Films, Haley has now recovered. She's got a boyfriend. She said that the therapist helped her, but the Disney films really helped her. She watched films such as The Little Mermaid, Sleeping Beauty, Bambi. She said the films made her feel alive, warm and fuzzy. It's remarkable. Up next, Love Never Dies. I'll be talking with Dr. Jamie Turndorf about afterlife communications next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. And by the way, I'm looking at this alligator on our coasttocoastam.com website. This thing is huge. The stomach is huge. Who knows what's in there? Anyways, our guest for the first couple hours tonight, Dr. Jamie Turndorf. Now, known to a lot of people, like millions, as Dr. Love through her website, askdrlove.com. It's the web's first and immensely popular relationship advice site since 1995. Might take some time talking with her about that, too. But Dr. Jamie has been delighting her readers and audience for three decades about the things that are going on in the afterlife communications, relationships with people. Her latest work, Love Never Dies, Dr. Jamie Turndorf on Coast to Coast. Jamie, I'm looking forward to this. Welcome.
Me too. So nice to meet you finally.
This is going to be interesting. Now tell me, let's go back a little bit, beyond just the bio. Tell me about Dr. Love. How did this all happen?
Well, I was born 3 months early.
That is early. 6 month preemie.
Yeah, and I spent the first 3 months in a preemie nursery. I was only 2 pounds, and a psychic medium I know said that I made the decision as an infant suffering alone to make it my ministry to connect souls because I didn't want people to suffer the pain of disconnection that I was feeling. And then, of course, the disconnection continued because I had a really crazy family, which is the case for most shrinks, you know. Crazy families, and so it just rolled from there. And then I became a therapist, and I invented a game called Love Quest, the game of finding Mr. Right. And out of that, I started being called Dr. Love. And what's funny is I had a premonition in the early 80s that I was going to be giving relationship advice over computers. But this was decades before the internet was born. I was just having a premonition. And then the day that the internet was born, somebody said to me, "You see this?" And I said, "Oh, that's how I'm going to do it over computers." And then I began Ask Dr. Love, the website, in the mid-90s.
And here you are.
And here I am.
Now, tell me about the evolution to discuss afterlife communications.
All right. So this is a big, you know, because I'm a mainstream shrink. Okay, so I have to give you some background.
Sure.
Love Never Dies starts, you know, part one is my memoir. So when I was a young girl, George, I had a deep...
You're still a young girl, Jamie.
Baby, honey, baby, I'm coming right through the phone and giving you a big kiss. Dr. Love's giving you a big one. So, but I'm not that young. But when I was a young girl, I had a detailed premonition of the man that I was going to marry one day. I saw him fleshed out. I saw everything about him. So I decided I'm just going to wait for him to appear. And he did appear on the first day of my freshman year at Vassar College. I'd been shut out of all the intro sociology classes, and the secretary told me to see Jean Pin, the department chair. He was the only one who could find a seat for me in one of the closed classes. So I walk into his office, and George, I have the first and only out-of-body experience I've ever had. I feel my soul shooting at high speed through a tunnel to the end of my life. Then I shoot back into my body, and I get this message: remember every aspect of this meeting. He will be everything to you one day. So after this moment of meeting him, I find out that for most of his life, Jean had been one of the most famous Jesuit priests in history. He had taught at the Vatican. He founded a movement called Liberation Theology, designed to fight church oppression from within. He was this radical feminist Jesuit priest, and he launched to international fame when he publicly opposed the Pope and the Catholic Church because they were trying to block the legalization of divorce, and he didn't want to see women trapped in marriages where they were being abused, so he fought on the basis of liberation theology. The church should butt out of the private sector,
wow.
And he won.
Gutsy, yeah.
He changed the course of Italian history, and this is what launched him to fame, and soon after, the Pope granted him the dispensation of his vows. He left the Jesuit order and the priesthood, and Vassar recruited him to be the chair of the Department of Sociology. So here, you see, our destinies were drawing us both to Vassar. So I should say, at this point, I was raised by two devout Jewish atheists. The only religion they practiced was religiously hating each other.
Oh, geez.
They taught me not to believe in God or the afterlife, never read the Bible, I didn't go to the synagogue or church. So, in the senior
And that's year, not like Jewish people. I've got a whole lot of Jewish friends, and they are deeply religious.
I know. So I was raised with nothing. So now here I am in my senior year, and I needed help with the statistical portion of my thesis, and I had heard that Jean was also a statistician, having founded the Vatican's first and only social research center. So I asked him, could you please help me with the statistics? And even though he wasn't my advisor, he helped me. And within a couple of weeks, we were madly in love with each other. And despite our different cultural backgrounds and religions, we were just soulmates. Twins, literally separated at birth. And for 27 years, George, we just lived this incredible life. We wrote books together. We restored houses together. We rejoiced in every moment we spent together. And then, in the last year of his life, we both separately started having premonitions that he was going to die of an accident. We just didn't know when or where.
That had to have been uneasy.
It was unreal. So on the day we left for our vacation to Italy, lightning struck our rose arbor and destroyed it. And then I saw 40 crows in the yard, and I said, this is not good. I had a bad, bad feeling. But we go to Italy anyway, and after days of rain, the sky clears, and we're sitting on the beach, and Jean's hand is up over his head, and it's as if to block the rays of the sun. And all of a sudden, a bee swoops down and stings him at the exact location of Christ's stigmata. And in this moment, I actually hear myself say, he's been struck by lightning, he's dead. And I watch my beloved suffocate to death in front of my eyes. Now, George,
with a reaction.
It was, I was so traumatized and so hysterical. I go back to the hotel room, and I'm shaking, and I'm trembling, and I'm just lying there hysterical, crying. George, the next thing I feel is his hand stroking the entire length of my spine. And I sit bolt upright because I know what I felt.
Yeah, this was not your vivid imagination.
No,
you felt
I
this.
I felt it. So I was so shocked, and that is the first moment that he was with me, and he's been with me ever since. And his astonishing and ongoing manifestations, often in front of witnesses, prove to me we don't die, and therefore our relationships are not meant to end in death. So as a result, I created a groundbreaking new, what I call transdimensional grief therapy method. And here I totally diverge from the Western approach, which is grieve, let go, and move on, which only leaves the bereaved at a greater loss. Instead, my method shows the bereaved how to say hello, not goodbye, and how to do it without the assistance of a medium, a channeler, or a psychic. And then there's one more thing, because as a shrink, I know millions of people harbor unfinished business with the dead, and I also know that Western grief therapy gives us no way of making peace with the deceased. So I have created this amazing dialoguing with the departed technique, which offers the first vehicle in history that enables the bereaved to not only reconnect, but also make peace with the deceased.
You know, when people pass on, I always thought that their soul would either, you know, move on, get reincarnated, and that would be it. I'm beginning to think, Jamie, that the soul might split where, like in your situation, he's still around.
Well,
but I think the other part of him might have already moved on. Or evolve.
Do you want me to give you some examples?
Yeah.
From Love Never Dies? Because in part one, I pick up from the point at which, you know, he stroked my spine, okay? And it's I'll give you like a little overview of some of the amazing manifestations. So I come back from Italy, okay? And I am just sleepless, right? And the morning that I come downstairs, I hear him saying to me, Jamie, open the back door to the kitchen. I want to show you something. I literally hear him telling me this. I open the door, and George, I see a chipmunk is sitting on the stone step. And the chipmunk looks like he's in a trance. He's frozen stiff. This is the first time that I noticed wild animals behaving oddly.
Mm-hmm.
I talk a lot about this when the spirit is moving through the animals. The next thing I know, this chipmunk starts mimicking the way Jean suffocated to death. He's literally ripping at his face the way Jean tried to rip the oxygen mask off because the air wasn't getting in. And I am watching this, and tears are raining down my face as I see this animal mimicking Jean's suffocation. And after about 20 minutes of this, I see the little creature visibly cough up a wonk of mucus, and he's in peace. And I knew that Jean was saying to me through this little chipmunk, which is what I came to refer to as an open vessel. Animals are natural open vessels for spirit communication. So this was the first time that he came through. Now, a couple of days later, George, I had to fax his death certificate and his to Verizon. I had to take him off the
phone account.
The phone account. So I had sent many multi-page faxes throughout the day, no problem. But when I go to send his obituary, the cover letter faxes without a hitch, but it will not fax. My machine will not fax his obit. I try again, cover letter and death certificate. Again, cover letter goes through, no problem, but the death certificate won't go through. I try 20 times. I finally just give up. The next day, I go to my lawyer. I don't say a word. I just hand the documents to the secretary, and I say, would you just fax this for me? And I'm waiting and waiting. And after about 20 minutes, all the secretaries come out, and they are crying. And I say, what is wrong? And they said, Jamie, we tried 20 times at least. Each time the cover letter faxed, but neither the death certificate nor the obit would fax. He's trying to tell you he's not gone. So I go home. And later that day, again, I have to fax his obit, and the same thing happens. I pause, and I say, listen,
uncanny.
John, I think you're telling me you're not gone. If I promise to try to remember that you're here with me in spirit, will you let this go through in its entirety? I feel this tidal wave of love, George, pouring through me, unearthly love. I reissue the facts. It goes through.
How about that? Jamie, stay with us. We're going to come back, talk more with you about Love Never Dies, The Other Side on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Jamie Turndorf with us, Dr. Love, and then we'll take your calls next hour with Jamie as we talk about the after night. So the facts went through. He just basically agreed with you, and he let it happen, huh?
Right. And let me share a couple other stories with you, if I may. So around this time, strangers start coming up to me and saying, your husband says, tell our story. They didn't know me. They didn't know him. They didn't know I was widowed. So it's starting to become clear to me he's pushing these manifestations over the top so that I will let the world know we don't die and our relationships don't end in death. So one day, I'm driving, and I pray to him to help my friend Emily find love. He never met Emily. Emily never met him, never saw him. It's 4:58, and I feel that tidal wave of love pour through me. And once again, I know he's heard me. I just feel it. That night, I get a phone call from Emily. She says, Jamie, I have to tell you something really bizarre happened. She says, today at 4:58, I fell into a trance, and your husband came to me. And he said, to find love, follow the gray stones to the church in your neighborhood. Now, this was already amazing because he used her to confirm that he heard my prayer.
Right.
I said, please help her find love. And she calls me and says, he told her to find love.
Out of the blue.
Right. And at 4:58, the moment I felt the tidal wave of love. So the next week, I go to my professional group. She's a member in the group. And I tell the story. And somebody in the group says, what was the church you went to? And she says, the name of it was the Claremont Church. And this member says, oh, my goodness, the Claremont Church is New York City's only liberation theology seminary. Remember, he founded liberation theology.
Mm-hmm.
So he was putting his stamp on it, at sending her to the church to find love and putting his stamp on it, letting me know he heard me, and always involving another party to further confirm. Do you see? So now, around this time, I'm very bereft. I'm crying. And I'm thinking, I have to call my friend Anne. No, I don't want to bother her. She's working. And finally, after 20 minutes or so of this, the phone rings. I drag myself out of the closet. It's Anne. She says, Jamie, did you call me? I said, no, Anne, I was too busy crying. She said, but Jamie, my phone rang and your name and number appeared on my caller ID. So we said, oh, my gosh. Somehow, he manipulated her electronics and made my name and number appear so she would know I needed her to call me. And it's crazy, right?
It really is.
Now, a year later, I have a bad cough. I can't breathe. I think I'm going to suffocate the way Jean did. So I say out loud to him, Jean, could you do that phone trick, please? This time do it with my housekeeper, Donna. Have my name and number appear on her caller ID now. 1 second later, my phone rings, and it's Donna. She says, Jamie, did you call? I said, no. She said, Jamie, my phone rang, and your name and number appeared on my caller ID.
That's remarkable.
I know. So it gets even crazier. So I go to my writer's group, and Gabe Davis, a devout atheist. I tell him the story. I tell all the writers the story. And he says, you know, I'd like to see that trick repeated. And this time I would like to see whether your phone shows a record of having been manipulated to dial out. So I forget that he asks for this. A month later, I go back to the writers group. I'm driving behind him and his wife, Robin. We're going to meet for dinner. All of a sudden, it's 4:58 again. I feel a tidal wave of love pour into me, and I look at the clock, and I register the time. I get to the restaurant. Gabe jumps out of his car. He says, Jamie, you will not believe what happened. I said, what happened, Gabe? He says, at 4:58, my cell phone rang. He said, I looked at the caller ID, and your name and number appeared. I picked the phone up, and a man's voice said, is Jamie there? Is Jamie there? He said the voice extended the syllable there like he had an accent. Well, Jean was French, and he did extend that word. It sounded like there. And he said it wasn't a real call. The voice faded away. It never clicked off. He said, Jamie, go get your phone and see if it dialed me at 4:58. So So I dig into the bottom of my purse. I hadn't used it all day.
Sure.
Sure enough, it had dialed him.
So it's been dialing from your phone.
Yes, he manipulated the... Now, okay, so here's the thing. Jean asked me to tell our story so that I would ease the two greatest fears, that of death and dying and that of loving and losing. And his over-the-top manifestations are for everybody listening. Because he told me after he left his body, let our love shine like a torch that lights the path for others. So our story is meant to let everybody know that your loved ones are here with you too. And they are just waiting for you to open the door of your heart and let them back in. So now, George, in part two, what I move into helping people overcome the false beliefs and any religious teachings that may prevent us from reconnecting. And I even talk about how it's possible, how it even happens that we can communicate with those in spirit. So obviously the first thing we all need to overcome is the belief that we're not supposed to stay in connection with loved ones in spirit. Now, I never had any belief other one way or the other because I wasn't raised in faith, but most people were raised with some kind of religious indoctrination, believe it's not possible.
Right.
So here's how Jean made it clear to me that we are supposed to stay in connection. It's my first night back from Italy, and I hear Jean speaking to me, and he's quoting something, but I don't recognize what this is. So the next day, George, I go to his priest. I meet him for the first time, and I tell him, Jean's been talking to me, and he's quoting something. So the priest raises his eyebrow in obvious skepticism, and he looks at me like, yo, this bitch has rounded the bend, you know. But then, when I told him what Jean was saying, the priest blanched. He crosses himself, and he says, dear God, Jamie, at first I didn't believe that Jean was talking to you, but I do now. And now he says to me, you are quoting an obscure biblical passage from the communion of saints. Like I would have known, I never went to church. I never read the Bible. Jean and I didn't discuss religion. Now, it took me a year to understand why Jean chose to quote that and only that passage to me. Remember, he was a religious pioneer in life, and he continues to be in the afterlife.
That's amazing that he just still is there.
I know, because he wants me to get this message out. The communion of saints says that our loved ones in spirit are one with or in communion with God and the saints. And since we're supposed to stay in communion and communication with God and the saints, this means we're supposed to stay in communion and communication with our loved ones in spirit because they are one with God and the saints. And his point is, what we've been told about the afterlife is dead wrong, if you'll pardon the pun.
Well, and I was going to ask you about evil. Does he get into that
at
all?
I'll tell you in one sec you get into that. Because we're not meant to live in this emotional wasteland, separated from those we love, waiting until we die and enter heaven. Because he said, heaven is a state, not a place. Heaven is all around us. Heaven is here and now. And it means we are supposed to reconnect now. So in answer to your really great question, you know, he informed me all about the misconceptions surrounding the afterlife. And one of the big ones is, oh, you're going to open the door to the evil, you know. And this is not true. First of all, our loved ones in spirit are our gatekeepers. And they are here to protect us and surround us in love. And also, we have the capacity to set boundaries. We can do spiritual call blocking. If you don't want to talk to somebody, you just do call blocking.
Well, do we create that then? Do we create the evil that some people experience?
I believe that. Jean never spoke about devils and evil and all the rest of it, and I certainly have never experienced anything but love. He surrounds me in love. You know, in part two, I talk about all the misconceptions like that. Are you going to open the door to evil, or is it going to prevent you from moving on, which is untrue, because by reconnecting, you transform your grief to joy, and you're actually more able to enter your life fully. Then I talk about how it's even possible for us to communicate it with spirit. And what I explain is we are all born with this innate ability to communicate energetically. And actually, we communicate energetically all the time without even thinking about it. You know, you park at a light, George, and you look over at the driver in the neighboring car, and that person looks back at you because he feels this energetic frequency of your gaze. That's energetic.
Sure. I used to experiment, Jamie, when I was in school, grade school and high school.
Right.
I would try to concentrate at somebody, and see if they turned around, if they could feel
they felt it
from the back of their head, for example. And you know what? 8 out of 10 times, they did turn around. Now, I don't know if that's a natural thing or what, but I think it works.
It's exactly true. We communicate energetically. Twins know when the other twin's in trouble. Mothers sense when their babies are in trouble. Close couples know. We often know who's ringing the phone. Turns out a lot of big scientists have taken this very seriously. Thomas Edison said in Scientific American that he was working on an apparatus to help us communicate with spirits. Einstein said in Upton Sinclair's book on telepathy, mental radio, he said, science should take this phenomena seriously. Freud wrote in 1921, if I had my life to live over again, I would just devote it to psychic research. So the whole thing is, we don't reconnect because we've been told, we've been brainwashed into believing it's not possible. And here's a story that totally illustrates this point. I went back to Jean's priest, and I said, I kept telling him the ongoing stories of Jean's presence. And the priest says to me, you know, once he's in heaven, you're not going to hear from him anymore. What a misconception.
And everybody would believe that, too.
People believe it because it's what we've been told, right? Oh, what? Heaven's too far for our cell towers to reach? I mean, our human conceptions are dead wrong. This is bugging me all day. All day it's bugging me. And obviously, Jean proves to me, I know exactly what's bugging you, and this is what he does. That night, I create the circle for my therapy group that I run in my house. And nobody is there yet except a woman named Ashley, who it's her first group. She doesn't know me, didn't know Jean. And we're sitting in my office, and the door is closed. And I hear ding, ding, which is my front door chime when the burglar alarm acknowledges that the door is open. And then I hear pounding footsteps, George, and then they stop in my waiting room. And I say, gee, maybe somebody's coming at the wrong day and time, not realizing I run a group now. Then I hear the footsteps pounding to leave, and the door chimes again. I jump up, George, and I run to the front door. My driveway is so long, and the parking area is so far, that there is no way that somebody could have gotten to the front door and even reached his car in the time it took me to get to the front door. And there's nobody there, George. So I come back into my office, and I say, there was nobody there. And she looks at me and she says, it was a spirit. But that was Jean's answer to the priest's statement. He was telling me, it's BS. Once I'm in heaven, you won't hear from me. Did you hear those pounding footsteps?
Have you had a relationship since he passed on?
You know, I am taking applications.
Okay, the reason I ask is I wonder, how did they on the other side react to that? Are they happy about it?
Absolutely. They want us to be surrounded in love. They want us to have all the love in this world and beyond. You know, and sometimes people think, oh, you know, well, you can't find another partner. This is, you know, going to stop you. Untrue. We wouldn't say to a mother, oh, you know, you love your first child. You can't have any more babies because there's no
room. You can't say that.
We, same with loving those in spirit. Our hearts are made to love people. We have enough room to love those in spirit, those who walk the earth. No problem there at all. So now part three of Love Never Dies. I show you how to establish your own connection with loved ones in spirit without the assistance of a channeler, medium, or psychic. And as I said a minute ago, we're born with this ability. Communicating with spirit is nothing more than just learning how to tune your brain to the spirit channel. And so Jean actually...
I like that.
He tutored me in how to do it. And now in Love Never Dies, I show you how to do it. So first he showed me how to create a state of receptivity. And he actually said to me, Jamie, the noise of the day drowns me out. Anytime you want to hear me, come to the bed and be still and quiet and you will hear me. And afterwards, my friend Anne told me the Bible says, be still and know that I am God. So there it was. So he showed me how to sit in silence, turn off the music, turn off the TV. And then I show you a list of peaceful practices and help you find the one that's right for you, like whether yoga, tai chi, qigong, meditation works for you. Then I show you how a special breathing meditation, because spirit is born on the breath. He showed me how to breathe to help him come, you know, into my life. And then I show you how to, you know, surrender, but don't let yourself get too washed overboard to your emotional state. And then I give you really fun exercises to open up your senses, all five senses, because spirits are coming through our senses, and they're energetically sending signals to all our senses. So obviously, the more our sensory organs are turned on, the easier it is for us to perceive the signs that they send us. Then next, I have a whole chapter on helping you recognize the signs of spirit presence, because so many people...
Well, that's critical.
Very important. You've got it, because so many people will say, I'm not getting any signs, and then I start ticking off all the signs of spirit presence, and then they'll say to me, oh, that happened, and that happened, you know? So, because the point to remember is when they're freed from the human vessel, they are able to influence the material world in infinite ways. You know, odd sounds, animals behaving oddly, weird sensations, drafts, temperature changes, chills, goose flesh, you know, symbolic communications, butterflies, and they even often manifest coins that were minted on the year that was significant to you. Like, for example, this year, on the week of the anniversary of his death, I have a patient in my office, and I say, he always puts coins in front of me that were minted on the year of the anniversary of his death. And my patient blinks, and she says to me, you know what? I almost forgot. I was in my bedroom, and my cowboy boots were off, and they were in the middle of the room, and I suddenly saw a coin flying from midair into my... He says, and I knew somehow it was for you, and I never took it out. And she says, let me get it for you now. And she takes her...
No way.
Tips it upside down. I kid you not. And I hear Jean say, yeah, you'll see. It was minted on the year I left my body. I get my glasses, and it was. Okay? So now, the thing is, Reed Tracy, the CEO of Hay House, said to me, Jamie, the next part of Love Never Dies, we have never seen anything like this, because what I do is I'm taking spirit communication to a whole new place, and I'm showing you how you can actually dialogue back and forth with your loved ones in spirit. And obviously, we can do this through many ways, dreams and mind melding, but let me give you a little example of the difference between how they communicate with us through signs, which are static, you know, they just drop a sign on us, versus how we can actually bring the signs to life and get into a back-and-forth communication. So here we are. It's the anniversary of Jean's bodily death. I go to my chiropractor, and the secretary is at the reception desk. And we're alone in the office, and I tell her I'm giving a public presentation for Love Never Dies, and suddenly when I say it, I smell gardenias. Now, I don't say a word, and she says to me, do you smell gardenias? And I said... Huh. That's the scent of sanctity. Jean is giving us a sign that he's here with us. Now, the next day, I see a patient. She needs to reconnect with her sister in spirit, and I tell her the story about the scent of gardenias. And at that moment, I heard Jean saying to me, but I wish I could give you a bouquet of roses. So he's dialoguing with me by inducing that thought in my mind. The patient abruptly sits up, and she says, Jamie, do you smell roses? So in that beautifully elegant manifestation, he put that thought in her mind, and he used her to let me know that I had heard him correctly and also bolstered her confidence in her ability to hear spirit so she could reconnect with her sister. And, you know, another really cool example of how spirit will dialogue with us using what I referred to before as the open vessels, people who are very willing and open to be used in the service of love. So my friend Anne comes to take me for dinner, and I say out loud to him before she arrives, Jean, it feels like you're coming home to me. She says, honey, I'm home. She walks in the door, and she literally says this to me, and she claps her hand over her face saying, what an awful joke. And I said, no, you were communicating back. Yeah. On behalf of Jean, he said, I heard
he did that through her.
Through her, through the open vessel. And then we're at dinner, and all of a sudden, she gets this look on her face like the chipmunk. She's glazed over. She's not, you know, not looking like herself. And Anne wouldn't cry if her beloved child was run over by a bus. Absolutely.
She's just, yeah.
And the next thing you know, she starts to cry, and she says to me, you look so beautiful tonight. I wish I had a camera. That's what he used to say to me. Nobody.
That is amazing. Jamie, stay with us. We're going to come right back. I want to talk a little bit more about this and about grief therapy that you do. And then we'll take some phone calls in our final hour here with Dr. Jamie Turndorf, Love Never Dies.